We're learning the Hakdama, Rav Kook's Hakdama to Shabbos Haaretz, with the parish of Rav Avinir. On page 50, the bottom of the page, where it says, B'tchumim Rabim, Rav Avinir is continuing to explain this yesod of V'hi Noyim Hashem Elokeinu Eloheinu Ma'aseh Nekol Olam Ma'aseh Yikra Lanu, meaning that the same way that when it comes to Shabbos, we're davening to Hashem at the end of Shabbos, that we should be able to, during the week, the time of Ma'aseh Yedeinu, when we're working, that there should be a hamshacha of the Kedusha of Shabbos into the days of Chol. And so it is with Shemitah, that entire time there should be able to be a hamshach into the 6 years. And Rav Kook was talking about that idealism, that he calls it idealius elokius, that godly idealism of Shemitah, that from one Shemitah to the next Shemitah, ultimately leading up to Yovel, is a cumulative the chachila. It should have this cumulative impact upon not just the individual, but upon the entire nation and upon the generations. Not just the generation, but the generations. So he's explaining on the bottom, B'tchumim Rabim, there's Rav Avinir, Nosofim Kayemes Hashpor Mitzdaberes. We see this in other areas of Torah, of Avodas Hashem, the concept of Hashpah Mitzdaberes, of a cumulative Hashpah. That the Hashpah is gathering, is accumulating from time to time. Hamav Sheres Ashnavim Psuchim El Haidia, that open up windows and opportunities to come to the great ideal. The Dugma, for instance. Okay, this isn't one of my favorites, but some of you might like this. Chazon HaTzimchonis, you know, the vision of vegetarianism. Tzimchonis, meaning Rav Kook, I'm sure that you all know that Rav Kook wasn't a vegetarian by the standards of modern society, of what's called a vegetarian, and he would, every Shabbos, he would have a little spoon of, that's what I read, that you have a little bit of chicken soup, just a spoonful with a little tiny piece of chicken. And it said in the Sefer that I read that he had a hard time not throwing that up. He was otherwise during the week he only ate fish and vegetables. He wasn't what they call now a vegan, and he ate fish, but it wasn't just a matter of politics or personal taste. There's something, he had a very, very deep mahalach in the whole Indian of eating, and he wrote about it in many letters, and there's more than one sefer that's come out on this subject of Cook's vision of the ideal of Am Yisrael at the end of time. A metzias really without meat. Of course, that raises the whole issue of karbanos and what's going to be, and how Rav Kook sees the end of time. Not going into the whole chazon hatzimchonis, it's a big subject in Rav Kook's teachings. Other marishon hayu also b'achilas basar. We do know that at the beginning, it was forbidden for other marishon to eat meat. Lo asad lavo, lo ye'ochel basar. And in the future, according to Rav Kook, meat will not be part of the regular diet. Again, we're not going to the Inyan Beis HaMikdash, but as far as the regular diet, meat will not be part of the regular diet. I guess if you like soy burgers or stuff like that, I think they're probably trying to improve them to get ready. Benatayim anu mischanchem lekach b'chinuch iti hadrigasi derech mitzvus haTorah. So Hashem, according to Rav Kook, Hashem has been preparing us over time. I mean, you wouldn't know it if you walk into the kosher restaurants, but preparing us over time to take a step back from this whole inyan of meat, of eating meat, to get ready for the ultimate return to the way of Adam Arishon, which was without meat. What are the mitzvahs of the Torah? So mitzvahs Ashrita, Isra Achilas Dam. In other words, all the halachas that go into the whole first section of Yeridei. All the halachas that go into the slaughtering of the and the preparation of the meat, that there are many, many steps that are required, and there's a tremendous amount of financial investment, halachic investment, and so on, that goes into eating meat and the isra of achilas dam, that we're not allowed to eat the blood, and kisu adam, and the carving of the blood, isra achilas chaylev, all the different parts of the animal, the fats, the different parts that we're not allowed to eat, isra basa b'cholov, meat and milk. Many thousands and thousands and thousands of details go into the halacha until a person can actually have a piece of meat. Of course, Rav Kook, even though I believe is a Baruch HaKadosh, I don't know if he could have ever pictured or imagined what it would be like with Achilles Basar. But the ideal is something that Rav Kook explained, that is to be weaned off of meat. I mean, the prices nowadays are probably helping with that. But to wean Am Yisrael off this dependency on Achilas Basar, that there are many, many steps that have to be taken until a person is able to put a piece of meat in his mouth. In the old days, I even remember, I'm not that old, but I remember when I lived in Eretz Yisrael, I remember that on the way to school, so I would go by bike to school, and on the way to school there was a schlachthaus, there was a chicken, not cow, but a chicken, there was a slaughterhouse of chickens. And that even when I was, so at the time I was 13, 14 years old, and it was very common even then to bring chickens to the, people would walk with a bag, with a sakit, with a chicken in the bag, and we'd go to have it shechted. I remember watching and seeing occasionally a chicken run around without its head, like the expression. They'd be screaming and running around the chickens. It was Leibedik, and it wasn't always Leibedik. It was a slaughterhouse. My father and my mother remember that's how they lived, and was the youngest in the family. Both my father and mother were the youngest in their families, and that was one of the jobs was to go to the shochet, and it wasn't, you didn't buy it off the shelf in the grocery. It was with the salting and preparing until finally you were able to have something fleishiks. It was a mahalach. And that's how it was when Rav Kook was alive. And Rav Kook explained that the ideal is without meat. Why is it that Hashem made that concession to man's taivas, and what happened, and why did Hashem allow that? And afterwards, by Noach, and so on, that he discusses. But it's not for now. But Elohim Hashpoh Shemezachas is Adam. But the point that Rav Avinair is making is that we see that the same way that all of the Shabbases of our lives and all of the Shemitah of our lives were meant to have this impact upon us gradually over time, that we become more Shabbosdik, we become people who are more Shabbosdik, not just on Shabbos, Halavai, but that we should become more Shabbosdik over a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday also. And we should become more Shemitadik over the first, second, third years after Shemitah. We should become people who are elevated people, who are not so bound to physical things. That every week by having Shabbos, it wouldn't be for Shabbos, every week by having Shabbos. Of course, there are people who make Shabbos into the most Magushimdik time of the week. And that's not what the intent was of when Hashem gave us Shabbos, that it should become the time when the person is more buried in Gashmias than during the week. But the that over time that a person should becomes refined, and that over all of the years and all of the Shabbos and all of the Rosh Hashanahs and all of the Yom Kippurs and all of the tefillahs that we pour out, and all, do we have to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help us that each Shabbos and each bracha and each tefillah and each elul and each sukkah should connect to the next one, and that should somehow draw together our lives and lift us up in a wave of kedusha, that we should become people who are more elevated people. That's how halacha works. We live as Jews. We live in this consciousness all the time of from Shabbos and toward Shabbos. Elohim Hashpoch Shemazakas is other mechanchasayis to educate and to purify, to refine and to educate. Lahavin Shabbat Chaim Enim Hefker. This consciousness that a bal chai, that an animal is not hefker, that an animal is not hefker. So there are all of these steps that are necessary in order to be able to have, to be able to eat some flesh. Because there are all of these steps that are necessary, that there should be a consciousness that a bal chai is a bal chai, whatever that is. And even with the eating of the meat, and with the birurim when it comes to the nitzaitis to bring a tikkun to this meat that a person is eating, the tikkunim when it comes to eating meat are much, much more. Not we're not mekubalim, and we're not Isaac, unless some of you are doing that secretly. We're not Isaac in this avodah of the tzaddikim when it comes to eating and all the birurim, but we do know that it's much harder to take care of a piece of London broil than some lettuce or carrot. It's much, much, much more difficult than to be mevara the birurim that are taken in that piece of this world than in something like that's a piece of fruit or a vegetable. With the birurim are relatively easy. Again, this is the meaning of in Kabbalah and the avoid of achila, but and that's why the ikur place of eating meat in those days was in the Beis Hamikdash. Was by the Beis Hamikdash. And the Kahanim. The Kahanim were big tzaddikim, who were Ovdei Hashem, of elevated people of Kedusha, and they had this inyan of being able to eat the meat of the carbon. And for the vast majority of Jews, it was something that was very rarely eaten, to be able to have such a thing, to afford such a thing. And the birurim are very difficult when it comes to having it, that it should be a nachila b'kedusha. But the point that he's making is that b'alechayim einam hefker, that over time we're taught, we're educated, that b'alechayim einam hefker. V'lanitan la'ochlam l'leshuma hagbala. And we can't just indulge without any restraint. Omnam leis ata yesh nehet alechlam anachai. Of course now, After the marble, so now we eat. Ach ze vadei eino ha'ideal. But Rav Kook understood, and many other tzaddikim, that's not the ideal state of man. That's not Adam and Chava began Eden mikedem. Adam and Chava, you know, they're medrashim, tzalim baser, whatever that means. But the simple pshat in the Torah is that. That they were living in a way of pashtus. Gan Eden was a place that consisted of trees, not butcher shops. That was the metzias of Gan Eden. It was a place of trees. And why davka trees, as opposed to the ikur being vegetables? The ikur was the peiros, the etz ha'chaim was fruit. And that's a Tu B'Shvat conversation. We're not going to go into that right now. But the tachlis is that it's not the ideal. The eating of meat is not the ideal. It's a bit there, but for whatever reason, but it's not a chadchila. Eating meat is not a chadchila. Hatar pasachas lanu ashnavim el ha'ideal ha'asidi ha'elyon. Therefore, in the mitzvahs of the Torah, such as all of these halachas that have to do with preparing meat, we're having a little bit of a posachis lanu ashna. I mean, it opens up a certain it opens up a window to the ultimate ideal of the end of time, where we're no longer going to be, at least according to this view, that we're no longer going to be eating stam, to be eating meat.
Oh, Rabbi says, "On Yom Tov, the symptoms of meat and wine." So how do you?
So dafka, when a person is in a Shabbos dikah place and he's in a higher madrega. So he's able to be mevara the birurim when it comes to having a piece of meat, and during the week when we're much on a much lower level, so the cow wins. On Shabbos it could be that the person wins, but during the week it's more often that the cow is victorious. It looks like when these guys sitting in the restaurant and the chevra is there having their fourth seam during the 9 days, you could hire a seam or something. They have, and so it looks like that the cow is losing. It looks like the cow is losing, based upon what's on the plate. It looks like the cow is losing, and everybody loosens their belts and sit back, and they make their bracha achrein, or they bench, whatever it is, or they order their dessert, chocolate volcano, or whatever it's called, and they're finished. So it looks like they were menatzeach. They were the meat of Netzach, and they defeated the meat. But the emes is in Panemius, the cows are all making fun of the Jews sitting around, and the cows were the ones that were victorious, not the Jews that are eating it. So Shabbos, there's more of a chance to win. During the week, it's very hard to win. And therefore, there was a... In general, they, not just because of financial reasons, but the people that were very restrained when it came to eating meat during the week. But Shabbos, a person's in a different madriga. But the meaning of Oinik Shabbos doesn't mean now you can let loose and everything goes. That's not Oinik Shabbos. The meaning of Oinik Shabbos is very, very, very great. It's the whole panemius of Shabbos comes to Oinik Shabbos, that a person's able to make the birum of Dior B'tachtonim, that this world was created to bring out Elokus, which is the whole tachlis of creation, was that everything is Hakol Baro L'Chvodo. And that's the Achil of Shabbos, is a very holy thing. If a person's able to eat, then a Shabbos they go away. He's not eating in a vachet they go away. He's not, But the tachlis is to be Adam Arishan, to be back to the Madrega of Gan Eden. Gan Eden was parv. Wasn't fleshiks. And through time, umachdira latochno, or latochenu, rather, as a ideal hazeh, and it's supposed to help this ideal, this ultimate ideal of being once again in Gan Eden, this ideal, b'talich iti v'amok, in a slow and deep way. A slow and deep way. For us to be able to absorb this truth of living in this ideal state, and a healthier state, and there's no question that this, as much as I can make fun of vegetarians and all this stuff, the vegan stuff, but lemaisa, it's for sure a step towards Mashiach. The whole Indian that in modern times that there was this new interest and excitement in eating that way, it's definitely a very, very, very big Nakuda of Kedusha in it, and it's part of the preparations for Mashiach coming. But like all the other preparations, so feminism is also a very, the Nakuda, the Garin, the seed of feminism is very holy. It's very, very deep and very holy. But then it's taken by people that in the wrong way, and all kinds of crazy things go on with that. So too, the Indian vegetarianism. I remember we had a Baal Shuvah, these three Baal Shuvah, when we lived in Farakwe. We had these Baal Shuvah, and they were coming to us for Shabbos, and we were asked, we told the vegetarians, so my wife, was looking up all these different things and to make it comfortable for them. And I remember there was one girl, I remember that her name was Vanessa, and I remember that Vanessa, I was trying to talk to her, but she had a pile of vegetables that was going up like to her nose. My wife was making all these different vegetables, and she had a whole platter of vegetables. And I just remember that, like with this thinking of what's going on over here. It's so much easier to have a piece of chicken or a flank, and it's like so much work goes into that mountain that she had. So much, and you can make fun of it, and there's a lot to make fun of, because there's all kinds of funny things that go on with it. And it's not about fish. Fish is not. There's no meaning like that. What the vegans is not bechlal. That's all together. Something else. But as far as this is concerned, the panemius is something very, very holy, of refining one's eating and to be able to eat in a way that's healthier, that's more refined. And we all, those of us learned Aris HaTshuva together, it was the beginning of Aris HaTshuva, it's Tshuva's Aguf. Rav Kook said the beginning of Tshuva is for the body to do Tshuva, to return to how it's supposed to be. Tshuva means to return, and returning to a healthy way of eating, returning to the way that we once ate before the chait and before the marbul is something which is very, very, very great. It's when people do it in the proper way, in the right way, I admire them. And I've tried over the years. I've made some adjustments, but certainly not as much as I should. And it's not void. It's a very chashuva thing. It's a chashuva thing. At Simchanos, vegetarianism, himitzius asidis. It's something that's going to be in the future. Chazon, it's a vision for the future. Asher yesh lekrosa hachanis behove, but Hashem wants us to get ready. Like with everything else that comes to Gula with Mashiach. Hashem wants us to prepare. And over all of history, there are preparations for the post-history for Mashiach. To prepare. V'chein ha-Yovel. And so too, we're going to talk more about Yovel. Yovel is V'chein ha-Yovel hu chazayin shahalach v'nivne ayde ha-shmita. So Yovel is something which is built through one Shemitah and then another Shemitah and another Shemitah until finally you have Yovel. And then all of those Yovels together build that time of Mashiach, which is a time of next week's parasha, will cross some Jua Baris, where there'll be absolute freedom from the Yetzirah. So all of the Yovel is freedom. We're going to talk about it. Yovel is Bina. Yovel is the world of Tshuva. Yovel is Chamishim Shari Bina, 50 gates of Bina. It's the absolute siluk of Ra, of evil, and of Yetzirah. Is the cumulative effect of all of the Shabbases and all of the Shemitas and all of the Yovels that will finally come to across from Dura Ba'aretz, where there will be complete freedom from the Yetzirah. So the Shemitas are all leading up to the big to the Yovel, and then all the Yovels are leading up to the big Yovel at the end of time. Ad shalasu lovu ye olam shekula Yovel. And when Mashiach comes, it will be altogether a world of Yovel. It'll be everything will be Yovel, Dick. It'll be that world of Yovel, whatever that means, the Metzius of Yovel. There's no longer any slavery. Everybody will return to his place, to who he is and who she is, to go back. Everything will return to the beginning. That's what Yovel is. Kiyam mitzvahs ha-shmita kehilchasa. When a person observes shmita in the right way, according to halacha, miroimem osanu, it lifts us up. Omachshir osanu, and prepares us el ha-yovel. Omekarvis ha-metziyas el-yona shel olam shekula yovel, and it brings closer that ultimate Metzius, the ideal Metzius of Mashiach, of a world that's completely Yovel. Kedushas HaShmita hi muchletes. The holiness of Shemitah is muchletes. In other words, that holiness is there regardless of whether people are observing it or not observing it. The same way that Shabbos is coming to in a couple of hours from now, regardless of whether some of our brothers and sisters are not keeping it. Shabbos is coming. Shabbos is going to be here in a few hours. And Shabbos is a Metzius. It's a reality in existence. We're learning about the Lam Tes Melachos, the beginning of that Chabura, the Aliyas Olamos that happens on Shabbos. Shabbos is a Metzius. One can either join her or stay away, but Shabbos is there. Shabbos is a Metzius in the world. And the same thing when it comes to Kedushas HaShemitah. So there are all kinds of ways of getting around it and that Rav Kook, of course, was very much involved in the Hedda Mechir because of the poverty at that time, and to help the Jews were not able to survive and so on. There was such poverty. There are ways that a person can live in Eretz Yisrael and go the entire year without ever eating anything with Kedusha Shemitah. That's why it's a wonderful project we were talking about it some weeks ago, about how to see to it that all the boys and girls, and at least in the yeshivas and the seminaries, that they should have the opportunity to eat Kedusha Shemitah, Paris of Shemitah. They have to be eaten in a certain way. They have to know how to eat in Eretz Yisrael this year. But you could live in Eretz Yisrael and not eat anything with Kedusha Shemitah, because you could You could be spending the whole year eating things that the produce of Arabs or other things that are from Chutz La'aretz and not eat anything, but Shemitah is a Metzias. Dusha Shemitah hi Mukhlatis, it's absolute. Therefore, even if Chas Shalom, the entire nation is not keeping Shemitah, which, you know, one of the main reasons for Golus, Chazal, the Torah tells us in the Teicha, is that Shemitah is not kept properly, and it's one of the main reasons that we're still in Golus. Therefore, even if the entire nation, Chas Shalom, is not keeping Shemitah, Kedushas, or God forbid, we're driven from the land and we're not able to be in Eretz Yisrael, or for whatever reason, we're still sitting here and we're not in Eretz Yisrael, Kedushas, I die no matter, the Kedusha of Shemitah is still there. And whether we feel it or we don't feel it, whether we're conscious of it or we're not conscious of it, it is elevating and is refining all of creation and getting all of creation ready for Yovel, even though we don't see it, we don't feel it, we don't notice any difference. But that's happening in a very, very hidden and deep way, that the world this year, Shemitah, the world is being dipped in a big mikveh. Mm-hmm. The whole world is tarveling in the mikveh of Shemitah. We don't see and we don't feel. The Metzius is that the world is tarveling in the mikveh of Kedushas Haaretz, in the mikveh of Yovel. Medoyim l'Kedushas HaShabbos. Same thing with Shabbos, Shehi Mukhlatis. Shabbos is Mukhlatis. That's what Chazal was talking about. They said that if a person, God forbid, goes to take a fruit from the tree on Shabbos, he's Michal Shabbos, the tree yells out, Shabbos, Shabbos. That the world is screaming, it's Shabbos. We spoke about that also in the Chabur. That the whole world is Shabbos. Those Jews who keep Shabbos are synchronizing their lives with the reality of creation. Those who are not are out of sync. And the non-Jewish world is not Goyish Shabbos Chayv Misa. His reality is Davka, not the Din of Shabbos. Not to recognize that, not to be part of that, but Shabbos is there. But Dharma Kedusha is a Shabbos, Shimuchlatis. It's only a person's not Shoyma Shabbos, or a person's not Shoyma Shviyas, not doesn't keep Shemitah, doesn't keep Shabbos Chalila, but doesn't have anything to do with the Metzias of Shabbos. Shabbos is there, and a person is taking the fruit from the tree that the world says, Shabbos. What do you think you're doing? It's Shabbos. Shimuchlatis. I told you I many times over the years that there was this, that when I was teaching yeshiva, there was this, I always think about this boy, Misha. He was a big guy, blonde hair. I can't remember his last name. He was around 5 years younger than you, Binyamin, after your class. I can't remember his last name. He was a big guy. He was very, like, laid-back guy, a good guy. And you know, he wasn't Shomer Mitzvahs at that time, and I was talking about this Chazal when I was younger, I was very unrestrained. Now I'm much more tame, as you see. Much more tame. But when I was young, I don't know if there are tapes from those years. I don't know. I was like mamish wild, and I was going on one of my rants about stuff, I guess, and I was screaming about Shabbos and about how how when a person is Machal Shabbos. So I was saying, you take the fruit from the tree and the tree screams Shabbos. You tear the paper on Shabbos and it's Shabbos. So I started yelling at this Moshe, and I yelled at him. I said, Moshe, do you hear that? When you go in the car on Shabbos, do you hear that it's screaming Shabbos? When you're doing that on Shabbos, you turn on the light, do you hear the light is screaming Shabbos? So he didn't start laughing. He was quiet for like a few seconds. And he said to me, and he said, we were in the class, and he said, I can't say that I hear it screaming, but I sometimes hear it whispering. As he said, it's good. I couldn't talk. I was honest. I sat there. I still think about it. He said, and he wasn't laughing. He got very serious. He became Shomer Shabbos eventually. But the way he said it, he says, I can't say that I hear it screaming. I'm trying, but sometimes I hear it whispering Shabbos. This guy, like, never got past the 60 on a test, you understand? Not because he wasn't smart. He was very smart. He just didn't laid back, like, didn't interest him. He hears it whispering. So that's what's happening. It's a Metzias Mukhlatis. It's an absolute reality, Shabbos. So sometimes you hear it screaming, if you're very, very tuned in. And sometimes you can only hear it whispering, and there are people that don't hear it, Nebuch, that don't hear it at all. They can't hear Shabbos at all, but it doesn't go away just because you think it's not there. Just because you don't celebrate it, it doesn't go away. It's because you don't keep it. It's there. And not only is it there, it has an effect upon even those who are not keeping it. It has an effect. That reality of every single week, that when the sun goes down, it's Shabbos. Even those who are not keeping it, even those Jews who are not connected to it, don't feel any shaykhs, never heard of it. It's something that's happening. And over time, it's preparing every Jew and the whole world for Shabbos, for the end, for Mashiach. That's what it means. V'himam shichel l'roimim l'hachshir v'sam etzias l'kras ha'yovel. V'zom k'dush Shabbos, y'much latas. V'en et kli b'kach shekolum atishmo Shabbos gilchasa. It doesn't make it, of course it makes a difference, but it doesn't depend upon whether or not the person is keeping Shabbos or not keeping Shabbos. Metzias is Shabbos. And then this part of the Maimer, Rav Kook brings up Yovel. These are the words now of Rav Kook. Hayovel zuit kufa haras olam. Now we've seen those words, haras olam, when do we see them? Bashrim Kippur, we see them. Hayom haras olam. When we say those words, Rosh Hashanah, it means that it's the birthday of the world. Haras olam is a lashon. Haras means hirayon or pregnancy, giving birth. And Rosh Hashanah is hayom haras olam. It's the birthday or the time that the world was brought into creation. So we say hayom haras olam. And Rav Kook takes those words and he uses them with Yovel. Hayovel zuit kufa haras olam. Yovel is the time of haras olam, of the birth of the world. Haras olam. Something new, something that wasn't before. Haras olam. Ha'arucha miyesod ha'chofesh eloki ha'elyon. That is established from the foundation of that ultimate chofesh eloki, godly freedom. Freedom, the need of Yovel is freedom. All the slaves are freed. Even those who would like to continue cannot. Everything goes back to Gan Eden. So Rav Aviner explains, Hayovel hu kvar tkufa shel darvis. Yovel already has within it some generations, parents, grandparents, grandchildren, generations. Arboim v'teshashan, 49 years. Brisen, bar mitzvahs, bas mitzvahs, chasnas. Hayovel hutkufa haras olam. It's a period of haras olam. Ha-hora olamas chadashim. That is expectant, pregnant, with new worlds, with the new ways of thinking, new ways of living. That Rav Kook calls a chofesh eloki ha'elyon, this transcendent, godly freedom. Hu olam ha'cheiros. It's a world that's called the world of cheiros. It's a world of cheiros. Of course, cheiros doesn't mean just being free to go wherever you want and to own your own home and to have all the rights and privileges of of living in a constitutional country or a democratic country and so on. There are many, many millions and millions and millions of people who live in countries that are democracies, but they're not free. They're not free. We're sitting here right now, a couple of Torah Jews after the coming to Parshas Emor, and to be free, Cheres, that means Cheres, to be free, to be completely free. That's Chayfesh Elokiha Elina, something else, Elma Cheres. Let me share with you a sentence I jotted down over here that I saw in the Malchus Shlomo from the Harnstipler Rebbe, from Rabbi Shlomo from Denver. Rabbi Shlomo Turovsky from Denver. So he has the Torahs that they have from him are like one line, or sometimes a few lines. But for Pesach, there was this line that I was looking at this past Pesach. Listen to these words. A couple of words. Listen to it. Cheres amiti, true freedom. I was talking to the family about this, by the Seder. Cheres amiti, true freedom. Eino shehu ben chorin lasos masha rotze. Cheres, true freedom, does not mean that you're free to do what you want. Elo shehu ben chorin lasos ma shetzarich. It means that you're free to do what you need to do, what you're supposed to be doing. You're free to do what you're supposed to be doing, not what you want to do. So, how many of us can say that? To be free to do what you're supposed to be doing, not what you want to do. It was the whole, all of the Diburim by the Seder, I was talking about this Nakuda, of what this Shlomo Turovsky said. It's very, very pasha, but if you think about it, and think about it over and over and over again, what that means, that's what Rav Kook is talking about. Again, I'll read it again. Cheres amiti, true cheres, true freedom. Ein l'shul ben chorin lasas ma sherotze. In America, that was the first thing we were told. It's a free country, right? That's like you could be shooting spitballs at some ninth grader, and he has a taina. You say it's a free country. It's a free country. You live in America, it's a free country. So cheres amiti, ein l'shul ben chorin lasas ma sherotze. We were talking about the Chassidus this morning, that the whole mussag of any taiva, any desire, any disgusting taiva that a person has nowadays. So the vart is, as long as it doesn't hurt anybody, not only do you give a heksher for it, but it comes like it's a good thing, it's a positive thing. Cheres amiti, eino shehu ben charon lasos ma sherotze. It doesn't mean to be free to do what you want. Elo shehu ben charon, you're so free that you're able to do what you're supposed to be doing. That's freedom. You're so free, you've come to a place of true cheres. It means that I'm mamish free to be the person that I want to be. Because an eved is held in all kinds of shackles and prisons and jails. And you could be completely, you could be living in America, in the freest country in the world, which we appreciate. That you're a prisoner of such taivas, you're a prisoner of bad midas, you're a prisoner of crazy Ashkafas, of Eves, you're imprisoned in relationships, you're imprisoned by the food that by the meat on the plate, you're in that prison of prisons. The whole world is a big Beis HaSohar, a big jail. And that's what I mentioned before Pesach. I say over every year before Pesach, the Meiser with Rabbi Levine, and about when Rabbi went to visit the Jewish guys, the Chever that the British held as prisoners, you know, guys from the Irgun, whatever, that were held as prisoners by the British, and Rabbi used to go visit them always Shabbos and Yontif, and he came the morning of Pesach, and he asked them how the Seder was, because they had a Seder there. And they said, Rebbe, the Seder, they loved Rabbi. They said, Rebbe, the Seder was going great until we came to Shvech HaMascha, because they didn't let us open the door, you know, in prison. So Rabbi said to them, boys, he said, Chaver, you could be sitting at home and you're in jail. is the door of Eliyahu HaNavi is in the person's heart. And even here in this prison, you could open that door. It's not the walls or the bars. So we don't live in those places. But you could be behind all different kinds of walls and barbed wire and that are not letting you out to be the person that you're supposed to be. To be the person we know that we want to be and we can be, but we're not. So Rav Kook is talking here about Yovel is Chofesh Eloki HaElyon. It's something else, this world of Cheirus. It's something else, this world of Cheirus. Olam HaCheirus. It's Tshuva, the world of Tshuva. It's Cheirus, it's Bina. And Tshuva means to return. To return to that person who you're supposed to be, that you're supposed to be, and you can be, and Hashem created you to be. That's what it means to return. That's what freedom is, Cheirus. You see what's happening now here in America. None of us who are older would have, I'm not even saying so old, would have ever believed that it would come to such a place where that the whole meaning of freedom of speech is being reinterpreted and reconstructed here in America. As we're sitting here, what it means, freedom of speech, it means you're free to say what I want to hear. That's what's going on. It's a pachad, what's happening. Mamsha Pachet. I mean, you can make all kinds of jokes about what's going on, but it's scary what's happening. If a person doesn't believe in the Baruch Shalom, you don't believe that this is going to be defeated. It's a Pachet. My wife was telling me last night that it happened this week, or I don't know, this week or last week, that you have the Holocaust Museum downtown, you know, that which I was there. I was there once. I wasn't particularly impressed with it. And that the museum canceled. I don't. DeSantis. There was because DeSantis from Florida, they canceled. There was some kind of a Jewish organization that was supposed to have.
They won't allow him to visit.
I wasn't thinking it was to visit. He was supposed to speak. To visit, anybody can visit. But I think to speak. He was supposed to be speaking. He was supposed to be the keynote speaker at some Jewish organization that was using. They have a nice hall over there to whatever, and they were going to have it in the Heritage Museum, and this DeSantis, who was probably the most chashuv of a politician, at least one of the most normal ones that's in America. So he was supposed to be the keynote speaker. Jews have a special feeling for this person, for good reason. He's done a lot of very good things for the Yidden in Florida, and he's. I don't know him, but from what I've heard, he's a good guy. And the Jewish Heritage Museum, who had as a guest two years ago or 3 years ago, this anti-Semite Casey, or whatever her name is, this goita of an anti-Semite, that she was speaking there a few years ago, and DeSantis can't speak, and this is the Holocaust Museum.
Political.
Yeah. And they made some sort of a feeble excuse up because of logistics, but it was a lie, and everybody knows that it's a lie, and it has to do with politics, and they're afraid they're going to lose some money, which they are going to lose from the other chever, but they're afraid they're going to lose money from the from our brothers and sisters who are, and from non-Jews who are, who believe in the freedom of speech. The freedom of speech, that you can't have a governor from the state of Florida speak in the Holocaust Museum, but the whole thing was that began with people not being able to say what they wanted to say, and with books being burned. And the Holocaust Museum is called the Museum of Tolerance. Of tolerance. It's a pachad. If you think about it a little bit, what's going on, and what it means now, freedom of speech. And I mentioned this morning, so why does Ben Shapiro have to have like a minion of people watching that he shouldn't be attacked? Again, I'm not familiar so much. I heard once or twice he's a very smart guy, and he's Shomer Mitzvahs. I don't listen to it, but people tell me very, very good things. My wife listens to it sometimes. One of my kids listens to him a lot. And why does he have to be protected? And why is it that if somebody wants to say something in the university, and he's a professor, he's going to be fired? If you say the wrong things, what happened to freedom of speech? freedom. America is a place of freedom. But you see that Indian of Cheres, of freedom, how it's twisted and how it's molded according to the taivas of people. It's what the taiva is. Then you call that. If that fits your taiva, then you're free to say it. But if somebody says, I don't agree that 5-year-olds should be able to have an operation to make themselves into a boy or a girl, you know, I don't think 5-year-olds should have that choice. I think it's, you know, not something for a kid to decide whether he should be a boy or a girl. Just let it be in the meantime what God made him. Or when it comes to abortion, what's going on with the Supreme Court? So the people who believe in freedom of speech, these are the ones who are the libertarians. These are the ones supposed to believe in everything. You're free to say what you want. But you're not free to say. When it comes to Roe versus Wade, then you're not free to talk about what you really believe in and the majority of American people believe in. That certainly the vast majority of American people do not believe that full-term babies should be murdered, right? Regarding little, you know, the fetus, there's different, a lot of opinions. But the vast majority of Americans do not believe. All the studies show the vast majority of Americans don't believe you should take a kid a minute before Mazel Tov and to kill the kid. The vast majority of people don't believe in such a thing. But if you speak out about that and you happen to be a professor in a college, if you're done. You're finished. Your life might be in danger also. And you're past 9 months. And your life might be in danger. Why can't you say that? Why can't you talk about it? The most basic things that we understood, that we lived in America, and that my parents appreciated, being able to come here, where they lived, where they grew up, they couldn't say anything, and they came to America, and you're free to talk. You're free to say what you want. Not to, okay, you can't scream fire in the movie theater, and of course, you can't incite the riot with words, whatever the halachas are. They're halachas. They're for normal, reasonable people. But otherwise, you're free to speak. But you know, you're only free to speak what these liberals want you to say. But if you say something that they don't like, they shut you down. They shut you down. And that has been seeping deeply, deeply into our world, into even what we call the Torah world. If you say something that the establishment doesn't agree with, even though it's Alpi Halacha, it's Alpi Torah, and there are other tzaddikim that hold like that, if you say something like that, then you will be shut down. There are different ways to shut down. There's no freedom of speech. That's a. There's no cheres. What it means, cheres hachofish eloki. What cheres really means? No, it's just if it's something that doesn't contradict my personal way of thinking or my personal taivas. So now all of a sudden it became. There were always people that behaved in ways that were different. There were always people that, when it came to intimacy and their personal lives, they. People have their taivas and whatever, we understand. And there's no reason to chalila to mistreat any person for these things. Of course, that's terrible. You can't mistreat anybody for what the choices that they've made of how to carry out their personal lives, to take away anybody's rights or to mistreat the Germans through homosexuals into the gas chamber too. There's no such a thing. That's vicious to treat people poorly because of their decisions of how they want to live. But that it became like a cause, or that it became like a it became some sort of a way of life and a way of thinking, that if you have a different way, then you're considered to be a Rasha. You're not allowed to speak about it. If anybody gets up nowadays and speaks openly about these things, or if you're a therapist that believes in conversion therapy of some sort of, that if somebody wants to come to you that they don't want to be that way, and you're going to help. So I mentioned this morning that by the Shia that I just heard yesterday from some very, very wonderful people, that they were explaining to us, I'm sorry that they're going through with their family, that there's a new thing that legitimizes 100% that a person has this inyan that they have to be, that they're intimate with multiple people at the same, simultaneously at the same time in their lives. And one tkufa, they have all different partners in their lives, men, women, everything. That's now there's a title to it, and that's mutalach, it's perfectly okay to be free to live that way. And if you and America should give that freedom. And if you're against that, you're not free to talk about it. If you think that's wrong, if you think it's immoral, then you're not free. And they have to be worried now that the justices from the Supreme Court, since it was leaked, that they could their lives could be in danger. How are you supposed to conduct a judicial system if judges are intimidated or have to be afraid for their lives, unless they agree with you? And that the president of the United... I'm sorry for going into this a little bit, but it's not to understand the Indian of Kheiris, that the president of the United States... That the president of the United States is not speaking against what's happening, against this Indian of how such a leak took place to begin with. How could such a thing have happened? Never happened. And that it's terrible, and it's horrendous, and it's wrong, and that the decisions of the Supreme Court have to be respected. And the president's not seeing these deborum at all. All he's talking about is how, like the rest of them, that we're not gonna let this happen. Or the vice president was screaming, "How dare they tell us? How dare they tell us what to do? How dare they?" I thought you're the vice president of America. And we have a Supreme Court. What do you mean? How dare they tell you? Isn't that how it works over here? What she's saying, that what that Rashanta is saying, is that she's a novella, and what that novella is saying, it's amazing that she could talk at all. That what she's saying is, how dare you say anything that I don't like? That's what she's saying. How dare? How dare you? Since when do we know? We have elected officials. The whole Indian of Roe versus Wade, anyway, is not a matter. It's not what they say that it is. They didn't say there's no such thing as abortion. And the state should be allowed to decide. And that was the whole thing of overturning this. That every state should be elected. How does the state decide? They're voting. The senators represent the people, the congressmen, they represent the people, and the people vote. And if they vote in your state, that's how America works. America works. It's a democratic country. Democracy is not the ultimate ideal. Torah is. But democracy works in such a way. And the vice president, who I don't even believe can spell vice president, the vice president gets up and she says, how dare they? How dare they tell me? Since when is that? So why can't you say that about anything that the Supreme Court... How dare they? What do you mean, how dare they? You believe in this system. You're the vice president of the country and you represent this system. And you're giving a drosha. How dare they? Not how dare anybody go and give this information about a Supreme Court drift. And all of this is just intimidation that there shouldn't be that the law should not be overturned. That's all it's to intimidate, to frighten the politicians, and to frighten the Supreme Court, so they shouldn't be able to say what they believe in, freedom of speech. That's so you see that the world will take this Indian of Kheiris and will make Kheiris into whatever you want it to be. But what Rav Kook is saying is that Chofesh HaElokei HaElyon is something altogether different. Olam HaCheres, Al Pi Halacha, Chozrim HaSodes LeBaaleihem BeYovel, all of the fields go back to the owners. V'Avadim Yoytzim LeChofshi, and the slaves are free. Zo Olam Shel Cheres is a world of Cheres. HaCheres Shalom Levas MeHachofesh HaElokei HaElyon. Our Cheres comes from HaChofesh HaElokei, from Hashem's, from the Creator who defined who we are. Who created us and says, what is it that we need to do and who we are? And gives us that chofesh Elokei HaElyon to become the people, to release us from all that's holding us back, to become the people that we're supposed to become. Mecherusu shel borei ha'olam. The creator of the world. That's where chofesh comes from. Freedom comes from the borei ha'olam, from the one who created us. Sheyodo lo tiktzar. Who ben charon lost his kirsoni? He's a ben charon to do whatever he wants. So she could stand there and scream, how dare? So how dare God do this to us? How dare God do this to me? Him adam ben charon is a person free. Omnam adam lochu tachas hashpos chitzonius. Shown as a person is trapped and imprisoned with all kinds of influences that come from outside. Hashpos to ashosios, there are things that are genetic that have an effect on a person. Svivosios, environmental hashpos, that from one's environment, one's upbringing. Mishpachtius, the family, Charosius, society, Chinuchius, things that we were taught. Every single one of us was in school, and there were all kinds of good things that were taught, and all kinds of nutty things that all of us have heard. But you grew up hearing all kinds of crazy things. Everybody here heard crazy things going on. There isn't one of us that didn't hear millions of crazy things. And if you watch television, and if you watched it habitually, it means that you were like sitting with an IV of craziness. You like pumped into your blood, absolute insanity. Like, you know, your definition of reality is the Three Stooges, or you know, or Leave It to Beaver, and that's already, this is already nice, you know. And what they're watching now, and that's mamish, the whole upbringing, what a person's affected by. So you're free. People who grew up with 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years of this stuff are free. We're prisoners of craziness. It's like one big insane asylum. The whole place is a base mishagoyim. The whole world is a big base mishagoyim.
You brought up institutionalized Yiddishkeit. Is the influence really coming from the outside, or does it really come from us and what we're projecting it to the outside, and then it comes back? I've always struggled with that. Where's that influence really truly coming from? Ultimately, from Hashem, but
we hope that we're guilty of this like anybody else, and that therefore there are many, many of our institutions that they project their own insecurities and their own fears. And what makes them more to the those who are there, and what makes it more dangerous is that they can enclose everything in chazals and psukim and Torah, whatever, and mesorah, and they, you know, all kinds of things that they heard from their teachers, and now they give this over to the next generation, and it could also be a taiva. I mean, be a taiva. That's a nice taiva. That doesn't mean that that's something that. That's going to give life to this particular student or this class or this generation. So it's oftentimes difficult to know, is it coming from the right place or is it coming from the wrong place? And it gets really confusing when it looks very religious. That's when it gets so confusing. It looks very religious. That's why you'll find that many, many, many religious people are terrified of freedom of speech. They're terrified that kids should speak up. That's why I've said this a million times already, 9 o'clock. I've said this so many times over the years that everybody's trying to figure out what's going on with the kids. And I've suggested this, and I get shut down right away. Let the kids talk. Why don't you just interview 10,000 former yeshiva students, guys and girls? Let them say what they want. Let's talk. Everything great, whatever the greats. There's tons of great stuff that's going on. And talk about what they went through. Just talk. No one's doing that. They'll never allow it to happen. They'll never let it happen because they're afraid. So instead, they'll have professionals talk. They'll have some like Odom Godel Hador say about how we have to, you know, just the problem is that they're not learning enough or something. Or they'll have therapists that will talk about it, and we'll interview the therapist. You'll interview other people. But never ever to ask the ones who themselves, just talk to them. Nobody ever asked me, like, what was it like in yeshiva? Or just to ask the kids. Interview thousands of them. You could dub their voices, you could put a thing over their faces, we don't want to mess up the shaduchim or their brothers or sisters or whatever, and just talk to them, ask them, what was it? What did you experience? And all the good stuff, great stuff, the mitzvah, there'll be plenty of good things to say, but talk honestly about the stuff that was not necessarily who you were and didn't speak to and came from people who had different agenda that was not necessarily coming from Torah and from Har Sinai, that other agenda. They'll never let it happen. I've tried this over the years in different places. I've spoken to people, and it gets right away shut down. Cancel culture. They'll never do it. Try it. Try talking to people about it. Why don't we have a whole special edition of the Frum magazine for shuas, speaking to the kids. Now that they're 20 years old, 23 years old, 24, talk to them in the 17, 18, 19. Talk to the kids. Let's hear what they have to say. Let them talk. Let them say.
Whole series of kids speak. So
yeah. Let them speak about what's on their minds, and if they felt that what they heard answered the questions that they had. Let them talk honestly about their questions. Let them talk honestly about their questions, but they'll never let it happen. the establishment won't let it happen because they're afraid of how many jobs might go down.
Like they're afraid to bring the Rabbani Shalom into even their learning. There's no discussion of the Rabbani Shalom. They could learn for years.
It's a tremendous fear to bring Hashem Yisbarach into the conversation, because once God is born into the conversation, then it raises all kinds of problems about, like, where was he until now? Are you so sure this is exactly the picture of what God wanted? Are you absolutely certain that this is what Har Sinai, what happened at Har Sinai, and what was meant at Har Sinai, what you've been talking to your Chavi here about? Are you so sure? We can't bring God into, if the last thing to do would be to bring God into the institutions, that would be a terrifying thing to bring God in, because it could undermine everything. If you bring Hashem's Baruch into any of this, it could undermine everything. Instead, we could say Psukim with Hashem's name, and we say different things about Hashem, but to actually bring the Rebbe Shalom in a real deep way, and to make Hashem and your relationship with Hashem as part of the conversation, whoa. What would happen then?
Yeah, and those institutions that actually do that, they're the outliers. There's something wrong with them.
No, there's something, of course there's the outliers. So, freedom of speech. It's this lack of real freedom. It goes very. It runs not. It's just not. It's not just in Harvard. It runs very, very deep. It's the influence, the effect that it's had, and it's always been there. That fight against the Yovel, the fight against Cheres. Of course, there have to be limitations, but the limitations are according to the deepest understanding of Torah and the Ratzon Hashem, not like with this particular person because of his inyonim and his insecurities that's projected upon the kids. But the second you talk about these things, shut down, canceled, done, finished. That's how it is. So it's gone everywhere. All right, I'm sorry. Let's have a lechtig and Shabbos. A good Shemitah.